In this episode, we discuss how digital is both a disruptive force and a set of capabilities that all firms need right now. Then we speak with Luis Cabrera, CEO of Budget Travel. Luis speaks about his storied career in digital across many industries and highlights applying digital skills across senior roles, companies, and continents. Of course, he speaks about his top three through his incredible journey from Scott Galloway, the storied NYU professor who helps him see a no-nonsense tone as he considers new opportunities, to Rich Lesser, the former CEO of BCG, who acts as his moral compass, to his wife, who drives clarity in his life. And you have to hear what he has to say about having a cool head and hot feet. All this and more. Stay tuned. You, me, and your top three. Building your virtual advisory board to better compete in the connecting world. Welcome back to You, Me, and Your Top Three, where we help you build your virtual advisory board to better compete in the connecting world. I'm your host, Greg Garrett. I found the last year one of the most interesting of all the years that I've been helping leaders to shape strategies or plan how to compete in this ever-digitally connecting world. Many of these leaders are Fortune 500 C-level leaders. The first thing is that since COVID, almost all leaders are wanting to work on some form of digital or connected strategy or some form of connected transformation program. What's happened is we've pivoted from an environment where when we start having conversations with leaders, we need to spend a lot of time upfront ensuring that those leaders understand the need to digitalize. And we've moved to this new era where people are seeking digital transformation almost at all costs, but have to revisit many times early in that process what they really even mean by that term digital or why they want to do it in the first place. So it's just a hot commodity right now, but purpose is sometimes being lost. It's almost become the norm for people to reach to advisors or consultants and talk about the need for this digital strategy or a digital or connected program or a industry 4.0 project. However, when you scrape beneath that surface of that statement, the leader is oftentimes focusing on a tool or a technology or some new way to work, maybe like agile or a process. When you ask them why, the conversation gets kind of short sometimes. Are you doing this to create a new business? If so, why? Are you staying in your current business, but seeing that digital is a means to compete against your competition in a much different way? So why? Or is what you're talking about when you speak to around digital really more of different ways of running the functions in your company so that they can do things like find efficiencies or deal with labor shortages or attempt to just bring freshness to that functional area? And if so, why? What's become real clear and focus to me, at least in this last 12-month period, is the need to explain to leaders that this term connected world or this term industry 4.0 or this term digital or connected, that they're oftentimes misunderstood or maybe just taken out of context. Maybe they take on different meanings based on whom you're speaking to about them, or maybe who these leaders have been speaking to, and what that person's background might be. See, the issue is that in Industry 4.0 or digital have become these terms now really of a lot of opportunity for systems integrators or large-scale consulting organizations. They become focused primarily on programs that roll out technology, like AI or AR. The application of these technologies may and sometimes be super relevant, but sometimes they're not. Definitely not the place that you should start of thinking of a major transformational program through the lens of the technology. What we worked on for years in different circles, definitely in this MBA course that I've been teaching for the last 8 years on how to compete in the connecting world, what we've taught there, and that seems to be a growing pattern here in 2021, well beyond the classroom, is for senior leaders to need to recognize this concept of digital or connected or this fourth industrial revolution in two ways. One, from the industry disruptive context perspective, and then, and maybe only then, in a second trajectory, as a set of capabilities that allow for their firms to compete in that shifting industry. Too many leaders are jumping to that second one. They're just driving out what they want to do, what their program is, what capabilities they need, without fully understanding the former. My theory is there's a lot of marketing dollars being spent by those systems integrators or consulting houses in that space, and not as much in the first one. Plus, people like action, and that second one's all about action. Do something. The first one is more of an understanding piece, which sometimes needs to get lost because people want to move fast. The reality is the connecting world has a set of digital trends that are reshaping the way companies compete. It's shifting industry competitive forces and offering new business models. And that is really the why layer behind many of the needs for the capabilities that can feel like action. Those capabilities become necessary and then have context if you understand that you're changing your business or competing differently, or that the industry competitive forces on you are different. And the currency of those capabilities, that AI, those things that we're talking about, those things that are being spent on, that is the currency of being able to change. But understanding what you're changing to is a real necessary point up front. Otherwise, you're just really chasing a shiny object that will sound good and maybe buy a few more months in your next quarterly update. Many leaders really need to hit the reset button on their firm and digitalize it, for sure. But first, they probably need to hit the reset button on their digital program altogether and ask why. So those are my contexts. That's what I've been observing. Hopefully, just hearing some of those words and thinking through what your program is, how are you digitalizing? Do you really understand the why? Are you rolling it out to a group of folks in your organization so that they understand the why? And then are you getting action-oriented around that capability? Stick with the why. Get actionable around getting those capabilities and getting them just as fast as possible. Of course, we talk all about this in our book. Throw those links in the show notes out there if those can be helpful. But bottom line is, today we speak with a leader who does get this in a real significant way. Luis Cabrera is a multi-time digital leader. He speaks to reshaping several travel companies throughout our show, including the storied Lonely Planet brand, and now he's on to working on this budget travel brand. He speaks of so many different stops in his own career along a digital journey that you may want to have a pen and paper ready, because he moves quick. There's been a lot of different spots that he's put his fingers and his mind on. It's pretty fascinating. So with no further ado, here's Luis.
So Luis Cabrera, thank you so much for joining me on the You, Me, and Your Top 3 podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We are rekindled connection from long ago. We caught back up a few weeks ago, but we hadn't talked for, I don't know, a decade or something, I think, is what when we were comparing notes. But you've had quite the interesting journey. So I appreciate you joining me here today. I'd love you to maybe tell everybody a little bit about that journey of yours, just in a couple of minutes, if you can help build that platform or the perspective that you bring to the show, so people know what you're all about.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, it was 10 years ago when we first met. Let me go a little bit before that. That's going to explain a little bit my accent. I was born and raised in Mexico City, studied communications, and I got into technology very early on, in the very early days of the internet. So when people were wondering how to build HTML pages, I was playing with software like Hotdog, which was an HTML editor, and I got excited for technology. Then I started building websites, and you know what happened during those days. Bigger companies started acquiring smaller companies, so I changed business cards for about 7 times. So my company was acquired by another company, and my company was acquired by another one, until I ended up in a consulting firm, one of the largest consulting firms in Latin America. And after that, I went into more like high tech. I started doing RFID projects and some knowledge management, which we didn't know, but it was kind of the early stage of AI, when intranets were kind of everyone wanted an intranet in PowerPoint, in SharePoint, sorry. and we're taking it to the next level and trying to make associations of the content, people, processes, and that's how I got into kind of early stages of AI. I developed a few interesting pieces of software. That's when I got in love with building products. And when I finished building these products, I was told to come and sell them. And that's when I first moved to the US in Miami. I kept building software for enterprise software for a few years. Then nature called, or basically advertising, what I studied, communications and marketing and media, called. And I was offered a great job in New York City, working for WPP as the digital guy. Very early into the advertising days, when they were trying to figure out what was this digital thing that they were talking about. So I went there. I was a managing director for WPP on the digital side for YNR Bravo for about 5 years. Then Web 2.0 emerged, and I moved to Washington, D.C., to work with this company, New Media Strategies. It was the company that coined the term Web 2.0, actually. You can look it up in Wired magazine. And this company was basically a digital PR agency. They were doing outreach, for monitoring forums and brand reputation management. And anyway, it was a great time. That was 2008, that time. And then my wife and I decided to go back to live in Mexico City for a little while, where I started my own company that eventually brought me back to the US. And that's when you and I met. We were doing enterprise mobility. At that time, the first iPhone came out. And as we saw that it was so easy to check the weather or check the stocks on an iPhone, we said, it should be as easy to check SAP reports on these things. So there should be an opportunity to build an enterprise mobility platform. And that's what we started to do for about 4 or 5 years. I left because there was another big opportunity to go back into consulting with one of the big guys at the Boston Consulting Group. And I was one of the founding members or early hires of the digital ventures team at BCG. I was there and I became the first homegrown partner. And I was mostly focused on fintech, retail, and travel. I spent 5 years there, had an amazing time, lived in many different places, even moved to Australia for a year, working with one of the largest banks over there. And I was traveling all around the world. And then I met the owner, or the previous owner, of Lonely Planet. Lonely Planet is a travel guide company. And he hired BCG to find out what to do with the asset, what were the avenues of growth and potentially an exit. And after finishing this project, he took hostages and he decided that I should stay. And he and I got along really well, and we became friends, and he offered me a job and became the CEO of that amazing brand, Lonely Planet, largest guidebook company in the world. And it was a fantastic ride. And things were, my job was to do basically a turnaround. Basically come, employ all my tricks of product digital knowledge and try to resuscitate this brand that was kind of late to adopt digital technologies. And things were going all right. And then in the middle of my tenure, COVID happened. And that's probably one of the largest disruptions that I've ever encountered, because all of a sudden, overnight, 90% of the revenues of the company disappeared, like vanished. And what do you do when you have a company with so much legacy and with offices in all over the world, in Melbourne, Dublin, London, India, here in the States, and you have people working with you for more than 20 years? It was a tough moment. So you kind of put on hold a little bit of all these growth plans and you go into survival mode. And that required a lot of skill, and a lot of patience and collaboration from my teams. And we managed to not let Lonely Planet die. Like that's kind of a big accomplishment, not dying during the pandemic. And just to make it even more interesting, we were able to actually find a buyer for Lonely Planet, which eventually down the road was kind of a long-term plan, and we had to accelerate that. We were basically able to clean up the company, use the downtime of COVID as an opportunity to go and fix, get rid of all the technical debt that we have, and try to sanitize the company and make it much, much a lighter asset for another company with greater resources and a bigger muscle and other assets to leverage to take Lonely Planet into the next 50 years. So that's how 10 months ago, we sold it to Red Ventures, a large group in North Carolina, one of the largest publishing groups in America, hidden in plain sight. They're in North Carolina, super nice, big company. They own and operate a bunch of different brands like CNET. They recently bought it. Bankrate. They were the ones owning the points guy. So do your research and you'll find that, oh my God, these guys are good. They found a way to leverage all these other web properties and SEO them and make them successful businesses. So that's how I ended up with a sub brand called Budget Travel. Budget Travel is another legacy brand, which was started in 1998 by Arthur Frommer. Arthur Frommer, just like Tony Wheeler in the travel industry, is one of the pioneers in the guidebook industry. He launched this magazine with the mantra of vacations for real people. That was kind of the original tagline. And it became really successful. It was bought by Newsweek. It became one of America's dearest and favorite travel go-to magazine for 10 years. And then a Wall Street investor bought the company. And my understanding is that some of their businesses or most of their businesses went bankrupt. And that's when Lonely Planet came and took Budget Travel out of bankruptcy, bought the assets. And honestly, I think that Lonely Planet never knew what to do exactly with Budget Travel. Mm-hmm. Lonely Planet always had the bigger priorities, other urgencies, and other things to do rather than taking advantage of these great assets. So it was kind of put in the corner. And before selling to Red Ventures, months before, we decided to divest the asset. And after selling Lonely Planet, I came back and resuscitated this brand. So now we're in the fifth interaction. So fifth generation. So I'm calling it Budget Travel 5G. And we recently launched last week. We completely rebuilt the site from the ground up and turned it from just a publisher into a transactional, e-commerce driven, more retail oriented travel website. And things are going great. We have received really good coverage in the press, and the website is performing. So we're happy for what's next to this great brand. And we're now focusing on the US domestic travel industry as opposed to Lonely Planet, which was global. Now we're focusing just in the US and see how far we can take it. So it was a very long, short introduction. Sorry.
it was, but an interesting one. I always find it interesting for folks like myself, but a big swath of your career was in the consulting space. And unless you really try to control yourself and just say, hey, I was a consultant, worked for so-and-so, there's usually so many dynamic stories that are born out of this this consulting aspect, because it's not usually just one company. It's usually multiple industries, multiple textures inside the industry. So it makes perfect sense. So thank you for the depth. Like I mentioned to you, I mean, what a fascinating journey. And people like you that have been on truly journeys, truly career journeys, not just working in a company. You've got a story, and part of that story are probably the people that have surrounded you with, because you had to be kind of brave to, I think you said seven different companies before you even got to the first plateau of where you started. You've had a lot of spots. And so asking you to pick three people that you've been surrounding yourself with has got to be incredibly difficult. But that's what I'm going to do is maybe we can explore. We've got you, we've got me. Maybe we can explore those top three to be able to just give a little taste of the type of people that you surround yourself with to be this better and braver leader that you've become over all these years. Who can we start with? Who's somebody we can celebrate together?
No, as you pointed out, it's an incredibly difficult and challenging question because throughout my career, I've always relied on others for advice. I would normally do a lot of advising with peers and with the people that I work with, but at the risk of not naming someone like this was the Oscars, I wanna focus on people today because I think that those three people would change normally through your career. And in the 2022 version of myself, of me, the three people that I would choose are one that I don't know personally, which is Scott Galloway, and I'm going to get into the whys in a minute. Number two, Rich Lesser, the previous CEO of the Boston Consulting Group, who's now the chair. And number three, obviously, that would be my wife, my spouse, my partner in crime. So I think that those are the three individuals that today, when I'm in doubt or when I'm wondering what to do, I would normally immediately go back, go to them, if not personally, and just by listening to some of their shows or some of their thought leadership pieces. And probably I would start with, obviously, my wife. It's just because she provides me with she grounds me in a way that she asks the right questions at the beginning. Like, why are you doing this? Do you really want to do it? And she gives me so much perspective that when you're down to the weeds, you probably lose all perspective because you're focused on the details. So sure, having someone that is not working here and looking at all the mess that I have in front of me provides me clarity at the beginning.
Let's just ask a couple questions about her dive a little deeply into her. So you've known her for a lot of this journey. She's been with you. You grew up together. Where'd you meet her?
Actually, we're high school sweethearts.
Oh, there it is. So she really knows how to ground you. She's got all the secrets.
Yeah. We've been together since 1994. So even before I started coming to the U.S., we lived in Argentina together, a little bit of Spain. So she has been my journey companion, and she has been with me all this time, and she probably has the greatest job and the most important job on earth, which is taking care of our two kids and growing them into really well-rounded individuals. So yes.
That's wonderful. And maybe just one more question, because it could be a show about a spouse, I absolutely, I think that anybody that celebrates them are truly honored, but you said she's got the most important job right now. I'm just curious, back when you first started dating or your earlier career piece before you had children, did she have a career and was it a similar one or was it something?
She has two master's degrees in marketing, one MBA and another master in marketing. That's what she was in Barcelona for some time. So she's into marketing as well. Gotcha. She has her own little company doing the crafts for kids. So her passion is kids.
Yeah.
So she has a company building crafts and stuff.
That's perfect. But it sounds to me like you got the longevity. She asks you the why. She brings you the clarity in your work, which is a great, incredible sounding board, I'm sure. But she also functionally, she may not be in the travel industry, but functionally around marketing, she may have an opinion or two. So there may be a glass of wine, and it's not only why are you doing it, but why don't you do it this way? Huh? So
yes.
That's good. That's healthy. Totally true.
That's totally true, and it's helpful. And you brought up travel, and I think that travel ended up giving us as a family so much perspective. And if there's one thing that I'm gonna leave my kids with, it's going to be that ability to hit the reset button every time we move, because we've moved about 10 times in the last 14 years. The ability for them to come into a new place, new school, hit the reset button and say, I'm the new guy here and I'm going to adapt to this new thing and I'm going to develop new relationships. I think I can see it working right now live because the way they interact with other people and they understand other cultures, I think it's fantastic. And you can never have enough of that. So I'm thankful for my wife on allowing me to give that opportunity to my kids, even though it has been tough. We have moved so many times, and sometimes it's like everything that fits in this 6 piece of luggage, that's what we're taking. That's all.
Resiliency. I mean, I tell you, that's pretty good. Survival, yeah. And resiliency. So that's not too bad. That's very good. Yeah. And you ended up, I think you told me last time, you're in the greater Nashville area now. Is that yes. where home is now? Yeah. Okay.
Perfect. Yeah. After living in San Francisco, LA, Miami, New York, we sometimes joke that we finally made it to America.
The heartland, or, you know, center America. Yeah.
Exactly. So, yeah.
That's fantastic. Okay, so what a fantastic part to start, because she has been, I mean, all of that journey. She's been with you on that professional journey, and as you said, the most important job, because she lets you concentrate on a lot of this other stuff you're going to talk about now, because she's got she's the rock at home. She's got that all handled. So fantastic. Who else should we go? Should we go to Scott next? He's kind of an interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Scott Galloway, NYU professor. He has a really popular podcast. He's sometimes controversial, or most of the times controversial. Sometimes he talks a lot about himself, which is fine. We're humans. I'm not trying to idolize anyone, and I don't think it's the purpose of picking three to be perfect individuals. But that's what I love about him: his ability to be. He's very aware of himself, and I think I like the no nonsense approach and tone that he brings into his conversations, his interviews. And given the fact that he is so close to the younger generations, he's trying to tell people, like, get over it, don't make a big drama, stand up, work hard, and go for it. Don't overthink everything, and don't feel entitled. And I think that that perspective is very much needed in this world where there's so many individuals who can feel that the workplace is an extension of their family. Sometimes that takes you to many different weird places. And Scott has a way of looking at things in more like a black and white, like, no, this is a job, you can't do this. And it's more business driven rather than purpose driven. And it's an act of balance, but I like when he says that when he's advising younger generations on career, it's like, he doesn't tell people go and chase your dreams or pursue your dreams. He goes into an opposite direction. It's like, find out what you're good at and what you can be the best of and go there. Use your skills as an unfair, competitive advantage. Don't chase your passions or your hobbies. If you like doing certain things, you can put those on the side and pursue those personally, but professionally speaking, do the stuff that you're going to be the best at. And I think that's a very down-to-earth, direct advice that I think a lot of people should be listening to.
So regardless if you've listened to him or if that's just the path that you chose earlier, do you feel you have followed that advice? And were there times in your career that you hadn't followed it and you saw things, and versus the times that you have followed it?
Yeah, I believe that there's an aspect of don't complain. You wake up, you're in trouble, you're mad because your boss asks you to do something that you don't agree with. Get over it, do it, and find a way to convince people otherwise. So it's a lot more on taking action rather than just being like complaining about things not being perfect, because they will never be. So that's probably where I feel the connection.
Interesting. And given that you've been associated with a bunch of different companies, but I mean, you're representing some brands and they're marketing oriented, digital, a bunch of digital aspects. I wouldn't say digital means young, mm-hmm. but I can certainly say that it's not a dying career. It's still a growing space. And so you have to, you yourself inside of your brands and probably some of the consulting you've done over the years, you've had to, you know, see some of these youthful nature digital experts coming into the company. I think that the reason he's so pointed at that as an NYU professor is that's not the norm of that population, right? That's not a cutthroat and separate work and life and do things that you're good at that you may not love and value-driven versus purpose-driven. Those are most of the time it's on the latter side of those lists. So what are you finding? Are you able to kind of look through that population and find those that that are attuned to Professor Galloway's messaging? Or is it more of a, I sure wish there were people out there that would live this. It sounds good, but then I got to get back to reality and figure out the purpose-driven attraction to get them to come market with me.
Yeah, no, I think I haven't found a place where all these people hang out. But
damn it, I was hoping I could get a reservation there this evening. So,
yeah. But I think that we all have it inside us, and it's a matter of talking with people, and it's a dialogue. I think that when you help others and you're kind of mentoring others and you kind of offer them this type of advice, you'll see that people that were opposed to those ideas, they start to become more open. And then at the same time, you become more sensible to the other side.
Despite impending disruptions, there are defined strategies that greatly enhance an existing firm's chance of survival. Now, the rapid execution of what we call the first mile of a business's transformation is critical to competing successfully. Unfortunately, as a boutique advisory firm, we can't work with every client around the world. As such, my colleague, Dr. Warren Ritchie, and I captured a bunch of the detail that we use to deal with this disruption with our clients in our best-selling business book, Competing in the Connecting World. We offer a proven framework and an approach to assist leaders in understanding, preparing, and then bravely transforming their firms to thrive in this new digital era. We hope you can use it as a field guide to navigate your transformation journey. You can find Competing in the Connecting World on Amazon or any of the digital bookstores where you shop.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and I'll just make one more. I also get Scott's emails. I'm on some of this. Listen, the thing that attracted me to some of, I like the no nonsense. I love the kind of the handwritten graphic approach that he takes on a lot of his messaging and whatnot. But during COVID, same time you were struggling, he's in higher ed, absolutely struggling as well. And his absolute brutal honesty of the industry in which he sits in. Now, I know he's got a bunch of other revenue sources, so maybe it's a little easier for him, but sitting inside as a tenured professor of strategic marketing inside of one of the iconic schools on the East Coast, right? Here he is basically saying higher education is broken and there's going to be a bunch of failure in this space. And, you know, basically premium schools will make it, the lowest level schools aren't, and the ones in the middle are going to get squeezed to all hell. No one talks like that. I saw him on, you know, one of the morning shows basically speaking about it because people were caring about it at the time. Well, I'm just kind of curious with all that set up. I'll get back to your story. You said that you had to, you know, kind of struggle through COVID. You were right in the heart of the travel industry being cut to zero and whatnot. Was it helpful hearing someone else, even if it was just a distant voice? Was it helpful to hear someone else talk about the realities of the struggle and that this is just some companies aren't going to make it? Was that part of the connection with Scott along the way as well?
Yeah, no, definitely. It helked me deal with the reality through many of these shows. And even on travel, you need to learn also to be critic of yourself, your company, and your heritage sometimes. As we prepared, for example, our famous travel list for 2021, we decided to focus on sustainability. And that was a big challenge. Imagine a travel industry, a travel company. How can you be sustainable? Because travel by itself, just the connotation of travel, is kind of unsustainable. So, but it was romantic to think that, okay, people are going to stop traveling. So how can you better informed travelers so they become better travelers and they start doing it in a sustainable fashion, that they focus on the communities that they visit and they go from being just a tourist to be more like a world citizen and try to help others. And there's a lot of nuances in the process, because helping others, like all these things about volunteerism or while traveling, it also has its very dark sides, very colonial type of mentality of white people going all around the world trying to save people in the jungle that doesn't need to be saved. Like, they didn't ask to be saved. So there's a lot of things that you need to look at when you're developing your plans, and you need to be always open to self-criticism. And because if you're not doing it, someone else will. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you should take that for granted. So you should be at the forefront, knowing what are the challenges that challenges and obstacles that you'll be facing, and the things that could be done better.
Perfect.
And well, that, I think it leads to the third one.
Yes, please. Yeah, let's talk about Rich.
It's going to be short, this one, but Rich Ledger is one of the most intelligent, fantastic individuals I've ever met. Great memory, great charisma, and his continuous flow of communication. So I received his newsletter, but when I was a BCG employee, we will constantly get communications from him. And even as an alumni from BCG, the amount of information that is constantly flowing, it's very predictable, it's very constant, it's right, it's always there. So it gives me a sense of it's right there all the time. And the clarity and the candor that he has to put the moose on the table. And that's a term that I read on a book, put the moose on the table, of making sure that you can have and prepare for any sort of difficult conversation in a positive way. I think it's fantastic. I have not seen anyone with so much optimism and so much calm and reassurance and in a positive way deal with uncertainty and deal with difficult topics like climate change and purpose-driven organizations. So when I have enough of my Scott Galloway doses, I turn into BCG, which is like, ask the right questions. Ask why. Why are you doing this? And what? So what? More often than not, I find myself in situations where I ask myself, what is the BCG approach to this? And more importantly, what would Rich Ledger do under these circumstances? And that's a way for me to look at the problem from many different angles and trying to put people first, not only the business. And I think that has been kind of a really good kind of a moral compass. So Rich is kind of my virtual moral compass, if you would. And he has built a fantastic company. And it was a job that I basically fall in love with. And I think it's a trait or a defect of mine. I always fell in love with my job. Actually, that was probably the hardest part of my job at Lonely Planet, was to let it go, to grow it, knowing that eventually I will have to let it go. So that was probably the most difficult part of it.
No, that's interesting. I mean, first of all, what a kind of an honor statement. As Rich is your moral compass, and you think of him of what would Rich do. I mean, those are some pretty big those are big shoes that you've just built, right? I mean, that's a big aura for you to be constantly thinking about, or regularly thinking about, of how you lead and how you manage. What a kind of a beautiful tribute to the man. I'll just call out. I mean, you can take the bait and talk about it, or we can just make it a statement either way. But you said that he and the organization that he built there was excellent at looking at disruptive forces and asking the why, and you know, really, it's at the definition of transformation, right? I mean, industry is disrupting, and how do you transform the entity, the firm, the organization, to be able to grow or survive or thrive in that? And I call this piece out as, You were brought in there to build a digital division, right? To be the first member of the BCG Digital, which is
one of the first members.
And in many ways, at least sitting from the outside, I haven't been inside of BCG. Of course, that was a division that would go help clients with the digital stuff. But was it also BCG's answer to themselves a bit to say, hey, we are a very old industry in the sense of giving advice, experts giving advice in a structured way, for sure. But we've got to reinvent ourselves. Was he and the organization that was there, were they counting on guys like you to help them think about something different too?
Yeah. I think that I wouldn't be lying to if I tell you that. I would be lying if I tell you that it was all easy. The integration with, let me call them BCG Classic for a second, because there's no longer that division, but BCG Classic with these guys from Silicon Valley. So it was like literally like the show Silicon Valley meets, I don't know.
Yeah, something East Coast. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So suits.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
It wasn't easy. And I think that's part of my admiration. I like to think that they recognized that they needed to freshen up and they needed to get into the latest trends, and they did it in a bold way by launching a full DB. It was not like, well, we're just gonna launch a digital little department. No, there was a full subsidiary focused on not only digital projects, but also venturing. So they went all in into buying into the value proposition of digital ventures. And I think that the result was phenomenal. So I got to work with the smartest individuals that I ever worked with. So these people are geniuses. Like some of the kids that I met, like you'd be talking about in the retail space about a problem, and then boom, 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 2 hours later, someone built a model in Excel with hundreds of data points and analyzing and looking at trends, like, oh, wow. That was fantastic. And then the partnership itself and the way the company operates, it was just brilliant. The way people help each other. And again, the focus on the so what and protecting the brand and the client over everything. I think it was a fantastic journey.
Interesting. Very good. Well, so there's three examples, three of your top three, as you said, that you're still leaning on in different ways, remembering, listening to, and going home to be told, some opinion from the spouse as well. Great celebration. Maybe we can just pivot a little bit and talk a little bit about where you are today and some of the things that are going on. You're still at least partially with this budget travel brand. Yeah. Still in the travel industry. So I'm kind of curious, you talked about, we don't need to relive in detail the COVID, in the heart of the crash of the industry, but your different aspects of the industry are starting to rise back out. I heard the CEO of Delta speak a few weeks ago here in Detroit, and looking at some of their numbers and his projections, I'm kind of curious from your perspective of where is travel going in the next 12 to 18 months? And maybe more specifically, do you feel that there's some sustaining effects of COVID that will be the new normal? Everybody likes to use that term, but what will be some of the sustaining things? Are we going to go back to what it was like pre-COVID, or is there something that you think has kind of shifted in the industry that is truly now disrupted it?
Yeah, no, I think that there's going to be a big emphasis to, and it's going to stay for a long, long time, probably about a long time. I mean, 5 years. That's in today's world, 5 years is like it's a generation. But I think that domestic travel is going to stay as a norm. People will continue just looking to stay within the four walls or within the borders. And data and the amount of companies trying to now focus more local, less global, I think it's just growing. So you got companies like RV Share, this company that got $100 million. As I was selling Lonely Planet, they got $100 million in funding to grow. You got obviously the Airbnbs of the world, kind of exploding. So I see a big emphasis, as I said, in domestic travel. And I also see a big emphasis on going and exploring beyond the big cities. So beyond the New York, Chicago, LA, Miami, I think people are want to rediscover America, if you would, at least domestically. And there's these bubbles like you got New Zealand and Australia like kind of mingling together and being more open between them. But I think we're going to start seeing these pockets of travel, like Europe being one of them, Asia another one, Australia, and then the US and some Latin America. So I think that I don't see a recovery to pre-COVID levels everywhere, especially because of business travel. I think it has suffered permanent damage.
Mm.
I think that after 2 years, we figured out a way to do Zoom calls. And 2 years ago, you would probably have convinced me to go physically to your office to have this conversation. And I would have probably said, yes, let me take it. I'll jump into your plane and we'll meet. And I would love to. But at the same time, we have already figured out how to deal with businesses like this. And yeah. I think it's going to stay. Not for everything, but it's going to stay for a lot of things.
That makes a lot of sense. I think that travel bubble thing is interesting, that there'll be a little bit of hopping between bubbles, but a lot of it will be happening inner bubble travel, inner domestic travel, intercontinent travel, whatnot. It's an interesting piece. And the business piece is, I fully understand it. I also curious if there's a long haul effect on leisure or pleasure travel because of that. Cause at least for me, market of one doesn't really matter, but when I would travel for business to a place like Argentina, for instance, it gave me exposure to a market that I would say, now I want to come back with my family, with my loved ones, with my friends. And so it was an introductory affair that the business funded. Hopefully I brought some value for them, but it also supported the add-on service. And I'm curious if that's going to have a longer term effect on some of that international recovery as well, as, businesses just won't be helping people go on the scouting trip, if you will, any longer.
Yeah. You brought up probably an unintended consequence of that. But that's why there's publishers like Budget Travel or Lonely Planet in the world to keep informing and the destinations themselves. So, and again, I don't want to do a lot of self publicity here, but at Budget Travel, we decided to map all the more than 2,000 DMOs, destination marketing organizations, in the US, and we basically plot them on the map. And it's incredibly to see how many organizations, some of them are tax funded, some of them are privately funded, some of them are like non-for-profit, how many organizations have been created just to promote their own destinations.
Wow.
And if you go to the side, you're going to see in the map, for each little dot, there's an organization behind. And sometimes they're within 50 miles to each other. So I think that we're going to see a much more aggressive outreach of these organizations because, as you pointed out, people will have less opportunities to be surprised during a business trip and say, oh, I'm going to bring my family over here. So they're going to have to be doing a lot more outreach. Their destination forward.
That's interesting. I know that I'm up here in the Detroit area and have spent quite a bit of my career in and around the automotive mobility market. I'm curious, as a travel industry executive, a digital travel industry executive, what do you think the effects of autonomous vehicle is on the travel industry? Can you predict anything so far, or no effect? What are your thoughts?
I would love for having imagine jumping into an RV, taking a nap and then waking up in another city. I'm not sure that how close we are to take a nap in a moving out vehicle, autonomous vehicle. But yeah, I can certainly see that. And hopefully with all the new build infrastructure deal and trains, and it's everything is going to be about trains as well. I think that can also start promoting and moving the needle in terms of domestic travel.
Interesting. Interesting. And maybe one more tech foresight for your industry, if you will, is over the last couple of months, thanks to our friends over at Meta/Facebook, the topic of the metaverse is obviously becoming headline material again.
Yeah.
No matter if that's augmented or fully virtual, but how much do you think that this kind of digital life, this virtual world will play into the travel industry, and if some, how are you seeing that start to play out, if at all?
Well, I'm biased because I'm a professional bubble chaser. So I like to believe that it's real. And one of the first things that I did when I became CEO of Lonely Planet, I had a stop with at Magic Leap. Back then, the Magic Leap of early 2019. And I was able to sit down with CEO and get a demo and speak with him. And I truly believe that it can be transformative for some people. Imagine my mom who can't walk that well anymore. Imagine me giving her the ability to be at the top of Machu Picchu one day, putting some sort of headset and maybe taking it a step forward and feeling the air to be at the top of that mountain. Or imagine someone in a wheelchair. So you could eventually you will be able to transport yourself and feel a like life experience. Obviously, I think we're still a few years apart from that, but I think that it's going to happen. Amazon also just released Amazon Explore virtual tours, which is a very simplified version of what I just said. So you're not going to feel the wind, you're not going to be able to turn around, but you do it virtually, and you can have a tour anywhere in the world with locals, through their lenses and through their phones. So I think it will happen. And it's a matter of if I had unlimited resources and unlimited time, that would be one of the topics that I'd like to focus on. Just like when I was trying to figure out how to do websites at the very early stages of the dot-com boom, I think that there's going to be a huge opportunity for those who decide how to build AR and VR experiences at scale. So who's going to become the next razorfish of the space in the RV space, in the VR space? I think there's going to be a lot of value to be extracted very early on if you figure out to do this easily and produce websites like pancakes. Like now it's virtual experiences like pancakes. So I think that I'll put my money there.
Interesting. A former podcast guest, I thought was very astute when they said the effects of COVID on the mobility industry shifted the industry's language to be speaking. At the beginning, mobility was all about the efficient movement of people for the most part. And now it was people stay still and everything moves around them. And that's really what mobility became because of deliveries and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And that probably shifted things for the next 10 years because of it. It sounds like that a very early piece of the effects of some of this next layer of emerging technologies of VR and experiential capabilities is going to be somewhat the same way. The travel industry may, at least in part, be more about keeping people still and bringing the experience to them versus taking people to take them to the experience. I think that's a pretty, well, coming back in 6-7 years, we should talk about that. See how much of that came true. But I think you're quite onto something there. That's quite interesting. So as we round the corner here at the tail end of our time together, I'm curious, you've had this storied journey. What's next for you? Is it all in budget? What can you tell us about looking forward for you?
I would not take out budget travel for Spain for a little while. We're running it right now. I want to make sure that it's operational. Eventually, we're going to be looking for a buyer, an exit, or a partner. We need to do something with this asset as well. And when I say we, it's because I still work with my partner, my boss. And we have so many other things in the books and in cooking at the same time. So the reason we both got in touch again is because I'm exploring the EV space as well. So I'm building an electric car as we speak. I'm running budget travel. We're running a venture fund, doing a lot of ESG type of investments in areas of my expertise, like fintech, like where fintech meets sustainability. There's a lot of interesting things happening there. Trying to wrap my head around crypto, which is something that probably I listen to more crypto thought influence, like thought leaders, than Scott Galloway and Rich Letter together this time. And it's a really fascinating space because when you see that much energy being spent on one topic, something good will come out of it, regardless of our opinion, if it has value or not. How much people in the world right now is focusing on this thing, not only from a trading meme coins perspective, but just building products on blockchain technologies and finding better use cases for NFTs beyond the apes. There's a lot of energy being spent on that, and I think it's gonna be fantastic. And that's one of the reasons that I skipped that part because I didn't want to talk too much about that myself. But that's why I also enrolled after selling Lonely Planet. I enrolled into coding school, and I got my diploma as a developer on the newest stack, because when I learned how to do HTML was long time ago. But I went back to school, so I was kind of the old guy in the virtual room, and I graduated just recently.
Congrats. So,
I'm a full stack developer certified. And God, like it has evolved so much. I was getting so rusty. But it was all in the spirit of, okay, I want to wrap my head around this, because that's another bubble that I need to understand, look at, play with, and maybe it's going to burst. But I think that all these crypto stuff, it's happening as well. So that's the other area that I'll be working on. So lots of different things. So It feels like I have my own little digital ventures in my backyard here. So it's pretty exciting.
That's great. I mean, on the blockchain side, absolutely. There's a big mega trend in there that is lack of trust of intermediary organizations and more point-to-point trust, which I think that this blockchain thing is really, on the whole ledger side is attempting to fan the flames around trust for the most part, I think. But mm-hmm. I mean, here you are again in the early. Tell me about your journey. Many careers inside of one journey, right? And I thought for a minute, just for a split second, maybe you'd given that up and you're all in. But nope, you're still exploring many different things, all from a different seat now with your partner, your boss, as you said, and exploring a lot of different things. And boy, how interesting! What a fun way to run your career. As we close up here, maybe just one final question. You've had to develop some habits. I call them hacks. The way that you've hacked your day, your life, that make you this better, braver leader. Can you share something that you've built into your regular approach that people can steal from you to be better at their leadership?
Yeah. I would love to say that I exercise every day at 6 a.m., but I'm not as consistent as I should. So it's not going to be that. And I think it's more like a mental framework with a few short sentences, like, and this translates, I'm not sure how it's gonna translate because in Spanish it sounds great, but in English it goes a little bit like, you need to have a cold head and hot feet, not the other way around. Meaning, take things, think first, think slowly, and have your feet move fast. Not have a hot head and move slow.
No, I think it's perfect. Cool head and hot feet. Yeah, hot. That makes a lot of sense. And so, perfect. So
that what you permit, you promote. So wake up every morning and understand, okay, if I'm complaining about this, it's because I'm allowing this to happen. And if not, then you shouldn't permit it, because when you permit it, you're promoting it.
I think it's fantastic.
It's give people the benefit of the doubt. And I think that has been, I have suffered so many times for not giving it. Learn that there's always a side of the story that you're not looking at, that you're not aware of. That's going to give you a lot of, you're going to avoid a lot of problems. Remain teachable, and don't take it personal. Say yes. Say yes. So throughout my career, the answer has been yes. Do you want to do RFID? Do you think you can do RFID? Yes, of course. We'll find a way to to land this plane while we're flying it. But if you wait to know everything and have enough information to make decisions, you will never make a decision. So I think as you manage to remain teachable and flexible, just say yes. You'll find a way to make it happen.
That's pretty good. You got a couple of different hacks in there, I think, for sure. There's but just say yes is what a fantastic one for you on, in regards, especially to a guy that's had a journey like yours, kind of always on the front edge, as you said, a bubble explorer, or someone who wants to look out there and believe in these things, and kind of the first in, or at least first quartile into a whole bunch of these different movements. You've had to say yes, and that's great advice to leave people with. How can people stay in touch with you, Luis?
Either through, I think LinkedIn would be the easiest one.
Fantastic.
So LinkedIn/in/ Luis Cabrera, LUIS, 4 letters.
Fantastic. And they can stay on, if they're looking to travel anywhere domestically in the United States, budget travels, the place they should go. Perfect.
Course.
Perfect. Well, I appreciate you being here today, and sharing all your wisdom.
Great. Thank you so much.
Fantastic. Gang, you can stay in touch with me at all those same social handles as always. That's Gregory Garrett, GGRRT. And until next time, be brave and lead with no regrets. See ya.
You have been listening to You, Me, and Your Top 3, a podcast produced by CGS Advisors. CGS is a boutique strategic transformation advisory and consulting firm that recognizes how emerging technologies are disrupting industries and society. They assist leaders at their clients to bravely embrace and execute necessary enterprise transformation to compete in the connected world. Please like our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you like to stream podcasts, and follow CGS and the podcast at Twitter at CGS Advise, on LinkedIn at CGS Advisors, or directly at cgsadvisors.com.